This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, we're talking about the value of music with, of course, two musicians. Julie Byler is the director of The Chorale, and Jean Redpath. It's hard to know what to say about Jean. I was going to say she's a Scottish folk singer, but then I read that to call Jean Redpath a Scottish folk singer is like calling Michelangelo an Italian interior decorator. It's that was said in a review. And Jean, it's wonderful to have you on the program.
It's good to be here. Isn't that a wonderful quote? I should pay that man royalties, I'll swear.
That's right. It's great. And Julie has been called a local treasure because of her directing The Chorale, which has just finished a concert on New Year's Eve.
Who said that?
Well, I've heard it said by a number of people.
Oh, okay.
Dan Perino, who's also a local treasure from the School of Music at the university, was saying to me the other day that he thinks it's interesting that in many parts of the world, especially in Europe, and I suspect this is very true in Scotland, music is part of the culture. It's part of the heritage. It's part of what people think about when they think about themselves. But as Dan Perino said, music in this country often is seen just as entertainment.
Well, I think that's becoming more true and more true as time goes on. You shared with me just a minute ago about the fact that your family was a singing family. And, you know, I don't know too many of those these days. And I know that Jean and I have talked about this in Scotland, too. You know, we support these young artists as they come along in the hopes that they'll continue bringing music into the communities and that it will become once what it used to be again. But we've got so many forms of entertainment now that are just, blasphemous, I guess.
Well, at least trivial.
trivial, that don't include or doesn't encourage singing at home. Sad.
Jean, you've lived both in this country and in Scotland, and you've traveled everywhere, of course, and you're long and varied career as a musician. How would you respond to that statement of Dan's distinction between this country and elsewhere?
I think it's age-related, certainly.
Really?
I'd agree with Julie that finding a family like yours is getting harder and harder. I think the longer we live, the more likely it is that music will still become something that somebody else does. Either that or kids are going to be born with buds in their ears so that they can plug in. On one level, it's incredibly exciting, the technology, and on the other level, you have to work pretty hard to overcome it, I think.
I'm sure some of our listeners will, and I will give the phone numbers in a minute to call in and be a part of this conversation, but I'm sure some of our listeners would say, but now you can get on your computer these things like GarageBand, and you can create music so easily, and you can sing and be part of it and add live instruments as well as recorded things. Maybe there'll be a burst of music creativity.
Yeah. One of the most exciting things for me is the ability to open my mouth just about any hour of the 24 in any physical setting that the mood and the surrounds move me and know that I can communicate with whoever is there, whether they speak English or not.
Uh-huh.
You can't do that with a computer.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's try that. We just talked about the New Year's Eve program the Chorale had, and part of one of the songs we sang there as a community that was gathered in that huge theater, hundreds of people sang Auld Lang Syne, and a song written by Robert Burns. Jean Redpath, you've recorded 7 volumes of CDs of his songs, and I don't know how many more there might be done, but 10 you've done. You're signaling me 10. I thought it was just 7. Well, people should go to jeanredpath.com and get some of these wonderful songs. when I listened to Auld Lang Syne as you recorded it there this last week, I noticed it was a different tune than as we commonly sing in this country. Is that tune sung more commonly in Scotland?
More and more, I'm happy to say. Bless you, you've picked up Syne very nicely. I know we were having a discussion about the pronunciation, although I'll admit I'm not going to change the world in my lifetime. At least I can change one at a time. The American pronunciation is purely American. It has nothing at all to do with Robert Burns. It's not a Z. Soft S. Uh-huh. And it means, of course, old long ago. A sign is then, old long then. The research on the melodies that are on this particular recording that you have, Steve, are all of it's from Serge Hovey. I can take no credit at all for the work that was done in the background of these songs. He spent about 25 years researching 363 of Burns' songs and setting them as far as he could establish to the melodies to which Burns wrote them. And the great thing that Burns gets no credit for is the fact that he always worked first with a melody and wrote words for that tune. He wasn't a songwriter per se, because the melodies are all traditional. It's also one of the reasons I think about half of his songs have never been sung, because he had no respect whatsoever for the limitations of the human voice. Didn't worry too much about range or breath capacity or any other little thing like that. Auld Lang Syne, this variant, Serge believes, is the one that Burns had in mind when he wrote the song in the first place, and where the second one came from is hard to say, but Guy Lombardo, I believe, is responsible for the fact that everybody in the world sings this one.
Yes. Well, give us a little taste of the what may be the original melody, and I know you've no guitar here, no piano, but
This is what she does best.
As somebody once introduced me in New York many years ago, this is a woman who sings a cappella. That means without music.
Yes.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and auld lang syne? For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup o' kindness yet for auld lang syne. It's also a very poignant song, the whole thing. It's backward looking and quite nostalgic, and I have a lot of trouble dealing with the into the center of the room and see how many people you can knock over approach to it that takes place at parties a lot of the time. Kind of strange. I mean, it's nice to have fun, but that song to me is backward looking and quite poignant, rather than I would whistle on my fingers to illustrate it, but I'd do damage to the mic. It's a fascinating melody, though. It has a great deal more guts to it than the other one, largely because of the unfamiliarity, I suspect.
Yes, it's a lovely, lovely air. The sung by Gene Redpath here in our studio live at WILL AM 580. If you'd like to call and ask a question, request a song.
Oi.
Do give us a ring. Anywhere the program is heard, you may use a 800 number, 1-800-222-9455, and that includes if you're listening live on the Internet. We do have listeners we know around the country and indeed around the world. Callers can use this number, however, only in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-9455. In Champaign-Urbana, you may reach this studio, 333-9455. Our good engineer will answer the phone and put you in line to be on the program here with our guests, Julie Byler and Gene Redpath. And again, let me say the Robert Burns songs are available at GeneRedpath.com, and you can find a way to order them there, as well as many other places as well. Julie, let's talk a little bit about the program The Chorale performed at the Virginia Theater. That has been a community celebration now for, what, 18 years?
This was 18, right.
Right. And how long had the chorale been going before you had that idea to have the concert there at the Virginia on New Year's Eve?
Well, this is our 26th year.
Okay.
The idea for New Year's Eve came when I attended what was to be the last showing of a big movie on the screen there. It was over, and I stood up, and we looked at the facility, and George Karasotis owned it at the time, and no one knew what was going to happen to it. And I said, well, surely we could do something about that. CFCU is interested in a performing venue downtown. And since the Chorale is kind of without a home, a permanent home, that is to say, we're not richly endowed with a performing venue or anything of the sort, well, we decided to... We actually did the first program in May. We did an all-patriotic event and sold out and turned a couple hundred people away. Next, we said, well, that worked, so let's try again. And so the obvious time was a time when the university was, you know, out and people were looking for something to do. So we did New Year's Eve, turned another few 75 people or so away, and have been doing it ever since.
Now, another concert that... The Chorale did this fall was in November, and for people who have not had the opportunity to hear the Chorale live over these last 26 years, let's play a song that was done by the Chorale at that November concert. There is a CD out now of that. Let's do Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, which is on that Celebration of Life concert, one-of-a-kind American folk. Let's listen to this. This is directed by Julie Byler. It's accompanied on the piano by Kent Conrad from the School of Music here at the University of Illinois and also at Eastern Illinois. Let's listen to Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing.
Thank you.
recorded live in November. Tell us about the community chorale that sang that. How many people?
We have 72 on the rolls, and at any given concert, we always have five or six sick. So I think we were 65 New Year's Eve and maybe about 70 in November.
How do you control such a motley crew?
She's fierce.
Well, it's an interesting thing. It's really quite a privilege to do this. You know, as a singer, you can just open your mouth and sing wherever you are, whenever you want to, more or less. As a conductor, you really must have some singers present in order to do it. So the very same things that make it a pleasure and a joy are also the things that make it tricky. And one of those might be the very thing that you talked about. How do you control 70 voices that you say you don't audition, which we don't, diverse in every way you can think of, age, cultural background, musical abilities, learning styles, preferences, all kinds of things. I guess you do it by trial and error. You pay attention to what works. And I think you do have to – a community chorus of this nature does take a lot of paying attention, particularly in this town and other university towns where the wealth is everywhere in terms of what you can – listen to and choose to do with your time and your resources. So what you start out thinking that you might do fresh out of college, let's say, is not necessarily what you end up doing. You stay relevant. You make it something that the singers are captivated by, at least a portion during the year. I always say, if you don't like what we're doing now, just stay around because we'll do something different and you'll enjoy that. And then you have to also pay attention to your audience as much as maybe you would like to do the classics all the time. The truth is the audience likes to hear, as they did New Year's Eve, things that they know, can sing backwards and forwards and upside down and have heard recordings of. You'll Never Walk Alone, all of those, When You Wish Upon a Star, all of the things that we did. So you really must pay attention if you want to be long-lived in this business.
Jean Redpath, did you sing in choirs growing up?
I did, when I was at university.
Where was that?
Edinburgh. I was totally dependent on the strongest voice closest to me, however, since I don't read music. And to be doing both... I have Verdi's Requiem and there was another one on the go in two different choirs at the same time. I can't truthfully say that I had memorized the whole thing. I think I'm just a fast study when it comes to listening to what's next door to me. So I don't think I was designed to be a choral singer, no. It was great fun. I mean, there were 250 voice choirs, so I was nicely lost in there.
Was that also a choir that did not require audition, or did you have to sing for the director before you could join the choir?
I don't think so. I have no recollection of auditions. I think I went right off any kind of competitive singing. When I was in high school and always got the length of the last three in the singing competitions but never won anything. Presumably, even at that age, I was bloody-minded enough to think that this was the way it should sound, never mind what the teacher said. So those who were singers, which is visually that's the one with agonized facial expressions and hands clasped under the bosom. The singers always won, and I've never really been one of those. I prefer to think of myself as a singer. It left a very deep impression and a whole repertoire of English art songs in my head. I mean, the Nymphs and Shepherds School.
When did you get interested in traditional Scottish music?
Oh, well, that was parallel.
It was.
I mean, obviously, I grew up with it, but just, again, in Scotland, we're all bilingual, and that applied to the musical repertoires as well. You spoke Scots in the house in English in school because you were required to. So I sang traditional songs at home and art songs in school because I was required to.
And how did you become a professional musician?
Happy accident. It really was just serendipitous move. I don't know that you need me to take an hour and 45 minutes to tell you how I got from East Fife to California to Philadelphia to New York City to Gertie's folk city, Hootenanny. But it was all totally unplanned, totally spontaneous. Somebody up there was telling me, this is where you're going and this is what you should do. And it was 10 years into it before I realized that I was no longer doing anything temporarily. This was what I was about.
Now, touching a bit into your biography, I noticed you had several other jobs for pay, probably while you were trying to establish yourself and get enough to survive.
I think it's probably just about the universal truth that if you want to devote yourself to music, you better have a job for pay as well,
yes,
at least for a while.
Yes.
I was doing all kinds of things. Looking after children, God help them, scrubbing floors, driving cars, doing messages for elderly folk, anything that needed a strong back and a weak head.
Julie, when did you know that music was the direction you wanted to go in your life?
Well, I grew up with it. My father was the music man in a small town in western Illinois. And he was a singer himself and a cornet player, played in John Philip Sousa's summer touring band way, way, way back. So I knew early on, and teaching was the thing. I think I am a teacher no matter what I do or what job I'm in. And I've done a lot of different things besides music in order to make a living as well. So early on, there just wasn't much question.
We're approaching halfway through this program, and it, of course, is a cliche to say to go from the sublime to the ridiculous, but we really are going to do that now. This is quite accurate. And we're going to play again by request something that was sung on this program live last week, but this time without any words interrupting it. This is a parody. Written by, the lyrics were written by John McHugh, M-C-H-U-G-H. The first six verses, the last two verses, I will admit, I added before we sang this last week. It concerns our present governor here in the state of Illinois. You Indiana folks, I'm sure, can sympathize with us. But we have a song that's to the tune of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, and we're going to play it without interruption this time by request. And I will encourage people, if you want to tape this or later go back and get it off the archive here at WILL, please do. I think it should be played whenever our current governor appears in public. It should be sung from the radios because part of it's encouraging him to resign. And since this program deals with ethics and values, and we have reports from his own mouth of what he was planning to do, which was illegal, it seems very appropriate that some musicians have chosen to use a parody form. I guess this is folk music. Here we go.
Get packing, Rod Blagojevich, the state's in disarray. The Tribune wants you unemployed, at least by Christmas Day. The TV pundits want your head, could there be pay to play? Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Good riddance, Rob Blagojevich, your Elvis looks inane. The Senate's Matt, so's Lisa's dad, you drive us all insane. Our transit's broke, the state's a joke, the tollway's one big pain. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Good luck, old Rod Blagojevich, the feds have quite a place. Fitzgerald's poked his nose around, and if he has a case, George Ryan's moving stuff around, creating extra space.
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Wake up, old Rod Blagojevich, the feds just rang your bell. Just step outside and take a ride, no time for extra gel. They heard the tape, there's no mistake, this state's halfway to hell. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
How could you, Rod Blagojevich, this really has me beat. It wasn't nice to put a price on that there Senate seat. The way you threatened Wrigley Field, how can the Cubs compete?
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Get real there, Rod Blagojevich, you're much too smart a man. Remember what this state has done to Otto, George, and Dan. If Durbin doesn't write a note, you'll join them in the can.
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, save Illinois. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. You say that you have done no wrong, but you plan to steal's a crime. You want a great big union job, we'll not give you a dime. We hold our nose when you run by, we want you to resign. Good riddance, you bad little boy, save Illinois. Good riddance, you horrid little boy.
The tapes tell that you dropped F-bombs and tempted all the fates. You gave more jobs as patronage than all the other states. But we save money with our cars, our governors make our plates.
Lincoln's crying, land of corn and soy, save Illinois. Obama's sighing, the state is dying. Resign, you slimy little boy.
A parody song, Get Packin' Rod Blagojevich, by John McHugh of Green Oaks, Illinois, with a couple added verses by yours truly. We have a phone caller waiting on our line here. Others may call us at 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana or 1-800-222-9455. Line number one, yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Jean Redpath and Julie Byler.
Yes, hi. I have a question for Julie Byler that I hope doesn't offend her or embarrass her. She said her father was the music man in a small town, Illinois, and I've always wondered if you have changed your surname just slightly.
My father's name was Dick Fuller, Richard Fuller, and I was a Fuller, and that was too many years ago for me to even confess to, but Byler is my name and has been my name for the last 13 years.
Great. Thanks for the question. Jean, let me ask you a little bit about what is folk music?
Haven't a clue. There are traditional ballads, traditional in that they've been around for a minimum of 200 years. It's a youngster if it's any younger than that. I think it's anything that has stood the test of time and has gone into popular repertoire and is sung by many people in many different places without credit lines, without having first to say, you know, I'm going to sing you a Dylan song, or I'm going to sing you. It might very well be by somebody quite well known and still with us. But by me, it would qualify as a folk song if you could find people of several different age groups singing it in several different states.
Now, you have an amazing, amazingly broad repertoire and history of recorded music, over 40. That may be Over 50, all right. records, CDs, you recorded on every form during my lifetime.
Except wax disc.
Earlier, that is, right. And now so many of your things have been reissued on CDs through Rounder and is it
Philo.
Yeah. Philo.
Isn't it good? And I'm still alive.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Retrospectives that you can enjoy. As you look back, are there some things that you wish were available that are now no longer can be heard in the present CDs?
There are a couple that have vanished almost entirely. I did a collection of Haydn's songs at one point, the idea being that the material is usually presented as Haydn's Scottish songs, and I wanted to do Haydn's Scottish songs, if you see the difference. Though I understand the man probably didn't know what he was dealing with at the time anyway, but that was fun. It was fun, and it was kind of a halfway house. Working with Serge, for instance, these arrangements were a real challenge for me because he was working with sometimes four different piano tracks. Sounds like a Christmas carol. Three French horns, two string quartets, right, etc. It was impossible, economically and for me, musically, it was impossible to walk into a studio and work with a full arrangement. I don't read music. And I had a lot of arguments with Serge about how these things could be presented because I saw no sense at all in telling a story and then waiting eight bars before delivering the punchline, as it were. So we had a lot of ground to cover before we came to some place via media that we could work with.
The results are wonderful. I love the variety. I love the the way your voice fits with the very strange things.
Some of
that
them are quite strange. Yeah. Yes. Well, he also was willing to compromise because there are a couple of those cuts I mentioned earlier that Burns, when he ran out of traditional songs to work with or to collect, he moved into instrumental arena and used fiddle tunes and pipe tunes. Both of which are quite demanding if you don't have a nice supple bow wrist or a third lung under your left elbow. So to sing some of these melodies, you almost have to be able to circular breathe. And at one point I said to Serge, after three verses of a nine-verse song, I'm sorry, but it's impossible. I can't do this.
Oh.
And he said, well, do as much as you can. And it was fascinating. For instance, oh, well, hide the cooper behind the door, behind the door, behind the door. Hide the cooper behind the door and cover him under a mono. Hide the cooper behind the door, behind the door, behind the door. Hide the cooper behind the door and cover him under a mono. The cooper, oh, God, he come here, oh, oh. He caught the girls out of a saw. Oh, her good wife has gotten a thraw that's angered a silly kid man, oh. The cooper, oh, God, he come here, oh, oh. He caught the girls out of a saw. Oh, her good wife has gotten a thraw that's angered a silly good man, oh, we'll hide the cooper behind the door, behind the door. After about three verses, the reserve tank is empty.
Yes.
And he said, well, just sing what you can. So about verse four, I'd start doing, we'll hide the cooper behind the door. We'll hide the cooper behind the door and cover him under a mono. Oh, we'll hide the cooper behind the door, behind the door. We'll hide the cooper be, and he plugged in the holes with a French horn.
It
worked just fine.
It did,
but that was kind of
that's how you had to
arrangements
do
on the fly. That one didn't happen often, but it did happen. And he was willing to bend that far.
So, there were so many songs that I could have chosen, of course, that you've recorded. But I thought one from the Robert Burns would be particularly good. Oh, for 1 and 20, Tom. Maybe an English pronunciation of that, but let's hear this cut from Volume 7 of the Songs of Robert Burns, recorded by Gene Redpath.
And oh, for 1 and 20, Tam, and high sweet 1 and 20, Tam, I'll learn my kin a rattling sang. And I saw 1 and 20, Tam, they snool me sair and hard me doon and gar me look like Blunty, Tam.
Jews will sing, we'll ruin, and then comes in and 20 tam, and over in and 20 tam, and high sweet in and 20 tam. I'll learn my kin a rattling song, and I saw in and 20 tam a gleeful land, a cloud o' gear was left me by my auntie Tam. At Keth or Ken I need me spear, and I saw in and 20 tam, and over in and 20 tam, and high sweet in and 20 tam. I'll learn my kin a rattling sang, and I saw in and 20 tam. They'll hae me wad a wealthy goof, though I mysel hae plenty tam. But here's the laddie, there's my love, I'm thine at in and 20 tam.
The Songs of Robert Burns, Volume 7 out of 10 that have been recorded. Gene, with the death of your friend and producer there, I don't know what terms you used, researcher, who did all the research on these songs and created these lovely arrangements and so on, Serge Havi, is that how his name is pronounced? He died of ALS.
He did.
How long ago?
20 years.
20 years.
Can't you tell by the voice?
Sounds as young as ever. Now, have you recorded more since his death?
I did a totally different project. They're mostly unaccompanied.
Okay.
In Scotland. That's where the other ones came from. No, I decided that part of the success of this and part of the reason I did it was because I got along so well with Serge. Coming from an unaccompanied traditional background to something as, for me, complex as this was a little like asking an acrobat to do floor exercises in whalebone stains. It's very restricting. I find it incredibly restricting to have to remember A, what key I'm in all the time. I mean, it's not relative pitch-wise, but there may be days that I want it somewhere entirely other. Can't do that if it's arranged. And I didn't always agree with his phrasing. I didn't always agree with the speed. You know, arguments went on. But I had enough respect for Serge that his heart was in the right place, his motives were pure, and I couldn't quite see trying to do the same thing with somebody else after he died. Although his family, you know, said that his arrangements were there, his notes were there, to me that wasn't quite the same thing. I guess Serge was the driving force behind that for me, so
yes.
I didn't.
Let me move in a different direction, if I may. Gene, you've were on Prairie Home Companion for 12 or 13 years. You've recorded all over the world and performed all over the world. Why has it taken you so long to be on Keeping the Faith here on WILO?
It's your fault. I don't know. Goodness knows. Maybe it's because I'm so shy and retiring. Nobody ever knows I'm in town.
I'm sure that's it.
I met you through Julie Byler, who's our other guest today, director of the Chorale. Julie, how did you get to know Gene first?
Well, I worked for a time at the Lincoln Square Methodist Church, and I recall one day as I was going around the building, hearing a voice, and I went to the sanctuary, which is where it was, and I didn't know it was Jean. I didn't know before I went. I didn't know after I left. But I remembered the voice. And so in 2004, when, you know, part of my job, maybe the toughest part or one of the toughest parts is programming. So Alice Parker had been here for our 20th anniversary year, and I thought, what in the world next?
Composer, arranger.
Yes, a colleague of the late Robert Shaw. Right. So I found some Celtic music that I enjoyed and thought would be good for the chorale. And the voice came back to my mind, and then the name came. So I did a lot of research and finally hooked up with Jean's manager or agent and managed to get an invitation out, and she accepted. And so we met in April of 2004. And since then, it was one of those kind of instant connections, I think you would say. Even though she's not a choral person, she has coerced me. She's done some really good things for me personally and for the chorale as a unit. First of all, she's given us visibility, and that's always good for a community organization like ours. No less than the Mormon Tabernacle Choir uses people of such notability to get visibility. But she's taught me that I should sing more spontaneously. Because for me, for people who study opera and sing in that classical vein, it's all about preparation and a presentation and a performance. And Jean just kind of says, let's do this, you know. So that's given me a little bit more courage to do that sort of thing. And for the chorale, she has generously gone on tour with us twice, both to her home country of Scotland, of course, and then she agreed that if we'd go to Ireland, she would go with us. So we've done that together. It's been a fortuitous arrangement. So when she sometimes comes to town just to listen to us, which is great.
And Jean, when you listen to choral music, does it... I don't know. Can you put aside being a critic, a professional musician? Can you listen to amateurs sing with pleasure, or does it hurt your ears?
Is that a whole bunch of different questions on the same one, Steve? When I listen to choral music, I am totally subjective at this point. I can be critical, but my touchstone at this point is the chorale. I grew up with the Glasgow Orpheus and the Glasgow Phoenix, which is a very different sound. It's a very trained. What's the language I'm looking for?
British.
Studied. It's a very studied sound. It's part of my past, and I was really quite staggered recently. I was in the East, staying with friends, and a friend of that family was in a choral group of almost exactly the same size, and it was really quite a strange experience for me to sit in a hall and watch 65 people file in and wonder why none of those faces was familiar, because they should have been, you know. Where were the bodies I was looking for? And every time something happened, I think, oh my heavens, Julie would never have let that happen. The tone was missing. I think the only thing that we haven't touched on here, yes, organizational planning, forethought. What hasn't been mentioned at all is passion. And I think what blew me away the first time I ever heard the chorale, and it was probably at a very vulnerable time in my own life, but just the same, the sound that comes out of that group is hard to beat. It's hard to beat. The tone itself, yes, and the fact that you can't hear individual voices, but I think those 70 folk reflect the drive and the passion that this woman approaches the thing with.
And Julie is the founder as well as the conductor of the chorale over the last 26 years. But before we let her say a word or two, Jean, let me ask you one other thing. When you hear a community group of volunteers singing, what's the value of that for them?
I have only one benchmark, and this is a family. This is an amazing group of people who are so mutually supportive that it brings tears to my eyes. I mean, this time around, about half of them said to me, "Welcome home." I mean, I realize I've moved in with Alan and Julie, but that's a little different thing. I noticed they didn't say welcome home, but they, the corral, and they see me. Nice to see you again. Uh-huh. Welcome home. Uh-huh. And the way that the individual members are looked after, you know, having toured with them twice, I've seen quite a few of these people under a lot of circumstances, many of which were adverse. You know, they were tired. They were hungry, they were cold. All of a sudden, we had an hour and a half more traveling than was expected. Incredibly malleable, good-natured, flexible, and supportive. So, yes, supportive always.
And what's the value to people who listen to a, in this case, a choral, or in your case, a solo a cappella concert? What do people get out of it? You talked about you heard the chorale when you were at a vulnerable place in your life, mm-hmm. a time in your life. Can music heal? I know I've asked three more questions.
Oh, heavens, yes. Good heavens, yes. Probably better than anything else I can think of, with the possible exception of animals. And you can reach an awful lot more people an awful lot more readily with music than you can with animals one-on-one. What's the benefit? My great cry with anybody that's asking me about songs is, if you don't believe it, don't sing it. And I think what comes across the footlight from the chorales, they totally believe every note they utter. And that's like molasses on raw nerves. Sure, it's healing.
Julie, what has motivated you to stick with a project like this that makes use of whoever may walk through the door?
Well, it's like I said, when you get out of college and you've got your degree in your hand and you think you know what you're going to do, you're oftentimes mistaken. And you're put in various places and you respond to needs and opportunities. And you pay attention. I spoke earlier about paying attention to what – I think it's what I'm supposed to do. And it's not something I would have thought to say that I – don't audition this group. I revisit that decision, probably twice a year. And I still come back to the idea that, and I think I have my dad, he was the music person. He went to all the grade schools and for free gave lessons to these kids at a young age so that he would have a feeder system. I just think that people, ordinary people, ought to be able to sing and not make ordinary sounds. I don't expect ordinary sounds. And I think once someone experiences what the ensemble can do, the ensemble is greater than any one part, you know, that you can make wonderful music by being a part of this larger group, then it becomes something that, you asked about the audience. You get to bring your own experience, your own ears, and it's a very private, individual thing, what you hear. So that's what I think that an audience might get from this. Yes, healing. We sing when we're happy. We sing when we're to express grief and sorrow.
Or anger.
Or take it out and, you know, forget the week and come and sing on Sunday nights and focus on something else other than our physical ailments or our mental troubles or whatever. But it's a very powerful, unifying medium.
Jane?
It's Roto-Rooter for the emotions.
When I should probably confess that I joined the chorale just this fall, and I had not been able to be part of a regular singing group because of various issues in my life for a while, but I have found in retirement it's a pleasure, partly because when I'm focusing on that music for that 2 hours, 2.5 hours, however long the rehearsals go sometimes, I can forget about everything else. I can forget about stresses. I can forget about problems with our state, our nation, our world. And it's therapeutic, I think, as well as fun. But it's not the kind of fun for me that's, as Dan Perino said, we quoted him earlier, where it's something trivial somehow, but it's a deep pleasure.
Well, you're making something. You're creating something. So it's not a trivial fun. You used that word before, too. It's a process of building and becoming one together, in spite of the fact that we're so varied.
You talked about the differences with the people in the group of age, of background, of training, of race, gender, all these things, sexual orientation. All sorts of people come and yet can create something together.
I just expect it. I don't expect it to be ordinary. I don't think I could do it for 26 years if I couldn't require that they meet certain standards. And everyone does. There are a few who come and decide this is not for me.
Sure.
And almost without exception, they come and say, oh, I can't do this. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm not good. I don't sing. Uh-huh. All of which is mostly untrue. But there have been a couple who have come and said, well, I can't keep up. And they've self-selected out. But right. You'd be amazed at what you can do when you come into the company of people who've been doing it.
Uh-huh. Jean, your voice has touched so many people over several decades now. What are some of the stories you hear back from people who have been touched by your voice?
I think I would find those difficult to recount.
Uh-huh.
I've collected a lot of letters one way and another. I think probably the most touching, I know of two who wrote to say that by request, a husband or a wife had died to my singing by request.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, the least favorite thing in the world for me is to be asked to sing at a funeral.
Yes.
Especially if it's somebody I know, that's almost impossible.
Yes.
But it always comes as a surprise. It's always very touching and pretty humbling.
Uh-huh. Did you have musical training?
I had two lessons, one when I was 16 and one when I was 21.
Quite a teacher.
Different teachers. The first one was the local teacher who taught piano and guitar and fiddle and sold sheet music, and he ran me up a couple of scales, presumably to find out if I knew whether the next note was higher or lower than the last one. Went into the front shop and came back with the sheet music 4, When the Heather Gleams Like Stardust on the Hills, which is the kind of music I won't touch with a barge pole, and to my lasting shame, I never went back, nor did I pay him for it. So that was my first one. The second one, I was asked the most significant question of my young life when I stubbed my toe and said to the wife of the university organist, I thought I'd like to train my voice. She was a singer and a vocal teacher, and she smiled at me brightly and said, wonderful, what do you want to train it to do? And, of course, that stopped me dead in my tracks because I had no idea what I was asking her.
Uh-huh.
So basically she spent about 25 minutes with me, established the fact that I was doing nothing wrong, I wasn't going to injure the voice, and my breathing was already pretty good. Give me a couple of... Lay me flat on the floor, take a deep breath, sing this phrase, stand up, try it. Do you know the difference? Well, the trick is sound as relaxed when you're upright as you are when you're horizontal. Go and sing for 20 years. So that was the vocal training.
Breathing is everything, you know.
Yes.
And in fact, that's something that it does for the singer. It makes you healthier, physically.
We're down to our last minute. Let me ask Eugene Redpath, you've been interviewed thousands of times by many people, but what's a question you've wished you were asked that you have not answered?
Oh, in the last few minutes you asked me that, Steve. I don't know that there is one. You know, there have been so many. I think I can't even tell you of a question that I've avoided answering at this point. I don't think there is one. Uh-huh. I think I have talked on the stage, on the mic, and off for enough times that I've probably answered every question that's occurred to me and quite a few that hadn't.
And no particular filter?
No, the language provides all the filter I need, because a lot of the songs that I sing would be X-rated or R-rated, yes, at least, but the language takes care of that.
Well, several of Robert Burns, if people look them up in
that's
the
not my problem. That's not my problem.
Well, they're a delight.
They're wonderful. They're wonderful, body, healthy stuff. I'm all for it.
Right. Now, do you have to be a little careful, Julie, when you select music, because it does have to sort of pass the community censor?
Oh, yes, and I can't even begin to tell you examples. But, you know, we talked about diversity, and that includes every aspect of conservatism and, you know, from the whole spectrum. So sure. There was a time when I wanted to do a 23rd Psalm rendition that was not... The pronouns were not exactly correct. And absolutely, I have to be careful.
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah.
People can be offended by all sorts of things, sometimes for very good reason. Yes. Well, we're out of time. I'm sorry to say I've enjoyed the conversation very much with our two guests today, Julie Byler, director of the chorale from the Champaign-Urbana community, and Jean Redpath, who has sung for many decades, traditional songs, largely from Scotland. Been a delight to have both of you here in the studio.